Because we now got live music in the studio with a fantastic guest called Clive Walker. He's a local singer-songwriter, and he's also been listening into the show for quite a while as well, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
For your sins.
Sort of three months or so.
And what shows have you been listening to in particular?
All of yours.
Yes.
Most of yours. A couple of yours.
Yeah,
well, there was
of
one of yours once. Jordan I also listening to as well, and John as well. He leaves the radio when John's on as well, so. Been converted with some of the bands you've played as well, some of the locals.
When did you first pick up the guitar?
4 or 5 years old. My brother, who used to play with Unit 4 Plus 2 in the 1960s, so Concrete and Clay. He taught me my first song when I was still only about sort of 4 or 5 years old.
And do you remember what one it was?
Paddy McGinty's Goat.
Can you still play it now?
I still play it, yeah. Old Patrick McGinty, an Irishman of milk. No, I still play that from time to time. I sort of grew up through, my parents were both radio singers, sort of grew up in a very musical household. In the old days, they used to play for or perform for Radio Derby, which was one of the very first BBC Radio Derby, which was one of the very first BBC local stations. They used to work. They used to do some work down there. And they were basically continuity announcers in those days. They didn't have jingles or pre-recorded jingles, and they used to sort of do quite a lot of in between shows and like before the news, and they'd have a little bit of radio and that. They'd go in and do quite a lot of those bits and bobs. And then my brother as well, through the 1960s and 70s. I started writing quite early. I was about 14 when I started writing songs. Got a whole load bought by an A&R, a friendly A&R.
How many songs have you written personally?
In total, roundabouts, about 120. And I sold sort of 25, 30 of them back in the... It was around about 1979. They were all bought out by an A&R, so they went into the mill.
Yeah.
So I no longer own the rights of those.
What, can you tell us which ones they are?
No, because I no longer own the rights for them. I sold them on. Right.
So they were hits?
There were four or five of them were turned into chart hits. Yes.
Oh, wow.
It still goes today where people buy songs and, you know, you still employ ghostwriters and they get bought by producers and A&R people. And I said, when was I 18? You know, I was sort of 16, 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And I have a whole load of cash dumped in my bank account. And if I'd have kept those songs, nothing would have ever happened to them. You know, I've still got songs from the same time that I've never done anything with. And something happened with them. So it's that risk. Do you play your own songs and try and get them? And especially when, I'm talking post, you know, the in between punk and new romantics.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult genre then at that time to try and get into. And you had to, it was really about lucky breaks at the time. So I think I did the right thing. I don't regret selling them. They bought me my first house.
Wow.
So
They did do well.
I earned enough out of it then to be happy.
Yeah.
There's some things I do actually cringe over now and go... It sent me down a dark, very dark path for a long time, as some people will attest. I got through it, and there was a moment of revelation a few years ago, which... dragged me out of the doldrums and dark. And I picked my guitar up again because I dumped my guitar in about 1984.
Really?
Yeah, and so I quit the music industry completely. Really didn't pick it up again until year 2000. So.
And you get the enjoyments come back because there's no pressure and you're doing it because you love music.
I do it because I love music. I do it because I love the world of music. I just do not like the industrial side of music anymore because I've seen what it does. You know, the professional bands I was with, certain members of those, you know yourself from what the music industry is like, the temptations that are put in front of you, and I don't know about today, but certainly back in the late 70s, early 80s, that level of control that the management companies wanted over you was oppressive. You know, they would do anything to keep you in line. And that's one of the reasons why I quit the industry, because I did not agree. I actually, when we got our first recording contract, I sat down and read it. And that was me black mark straight away. And I started challenging some of the points. And I think within about 2 months, I was out of the band. Because they just, you know, I was being too, you know, what's this about? Because I did all the math as well on the, maths. I did all the maths as well with all the amount of money that were being paid or allocated. You know, if you get a £1 million contract, that's not £1 million in your pocket. That's a £1 million allocation for your production. At the end of the day, if you're lucky to get £5 in your back pocket from that, because everything is, you know, everything goes out of it, from your hairstylist to your clothes to your venues to your VAT.
So let's kick off with the song.
Yep.
And tell us about the song you're going to play.
The first song I'm going to play is around the time when I had my musical revelation. It's a song called You Are My Angel. And
is this written about anybody? Is this
it might be. It might be. It was at a time when I was really at my lowest point, my lowest ebb. And you have to sort of look round at that point and go, why? You know, who am I? I was two people. I was the person who I put out my persona out to the public. And then there was the private me behind it who was very, very different. I was just not in a good place. And a lot of that was music related. A lot of it was sort of history. A lot of it was just me trying to be somebody I wasn't. Mm. And I think the one thing that music does do is it either taints you or trues you. It tainted me at the time. So, of course, this brought me back to the true me. How come you're always around when I need you the most? What is the bond that's between us that keeps us so close? Are you the one who comes fluttering down from the sky? Are you for real or are you my heart's angel disguised? You make me feel good. Why do you stand by me when I don't treat you that well? Is there a secret you keep that you're hoping to tell? I can't imagine what's going on inside your head. Don't mind the words, there are some things just better off said. It'll make you feel good. It's not been easy to follow the thoughts in my mind. I wasn't sure what it was I was hoping to find. Is there a reason why you've stuck around for so long? Glad that you have, 'cause it's you that is making me strong. You make me feel good. You are my angel, the one who has guided my way. And you kept me focused whenever I tended to stray. You gave me hope when I thought all my battles were lost. You pulled me through, though I know you were counting the cost, 'cause you understood that to make me feel good. You must be an angel to me, to me, to me.
I think we should have a round of applause for that. Was beautiful. What beautiful lyrics.
Thank you, Rem.
It's lovely. You've got cracking lyrics that have come through from Anver.
Anver. Good man, Anver.
It's good man, good taste, Anver. That's a beautiful song.
I've got two albums, one of which is officially released, and I've also got another one which was my first album, which was called And About Time 2, because it took me 30 years to write it.
Yeah.
Or 30 years to get around to recording it. I think what I'm going to do is seriously think about going back into studio and re-recording that entirety, putting that out as a release.
Who did you grow up listening to that have influenced your music?
Well, the obvious ones, really, the Beatles. Beatles and the Stones, both sides. But my brother, of course, he was a big influence on my early music. So again, I loved a lot of the Liverpool sound. Mm. Although, even though I was from Derby, that influence of the 60s Liverpool was still very, very strong. But the influences around Derby and Nottingham, so the biggest band ever to come out of Nottingham, of course, was Black Lace.
Yeah.
And you know, if you remember the all the songs that we had from them. But there was a lot of... sorry, not Black Lace. And what am I doing? It's Paper Lace. Paper Lace, not Black Lace. I do apologise, guys. But again, I don't know. People like Dire Straits, Mark Knopfler has always been a very, very big influence. But then other people, there's a contemporary friend of mine now, a guy called George Papavgaris, who's a very, very prolific singer-songwriter, works on the folk scene. His lyric and the way he plays is absolutely superb. And again, I just love the way he tells a story and builds a sound. And again, I sort of listen to things. I think I like that. And of course, so in terms of production, I love that. I love what he does. So he's been a big influence on me as well.
Tell us a little bit about your guitar. It's a bit special.
It is a little bit special. It's Australian. I'm good today, mate. Australian, yeah. It is. It's a Maton, and it's a Maton EA10 electroacoustic 80, so EA80. It's made of pure Australian timbers. The soundboard is 1,000-year-old bunya, which is a very, very high-end tone wood. And it produces that beautiful, rich, beautiful, beautiful, rich sound. And it was a wedding present.
Oh, so, wow.
From my darling wife, Michelle, over there.
Hello, Michelle. And, good name.
Yeah. And it was a wedding present, because we got married, what, 18 months ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
After 30 years together. So yeah. Anyway, it was a wedding present. Bought it in Australia, and I just love it. I just love the tone of it. The history of it with all the woods and everything is absolutely beautiful. And it's my little baby.
It's wonderful. It is absolutely wonderful. On the back, actually, which is unusual, because you haven't got an amp, but it is you've got reverb on the guitar.
On the guitar, yes.
Itself.
It's a little unit called a tonewood amp.
Mm.
And it gives you a whole range of guitar effects. It's basically an effects box, but you plug your guitar into it. But the speaker of the tonewood amp, the amp actually is magnetic and clips onto the back of the guitar.
Yeah.
And it uses a little speaker built into the amplifier itself that touches onto the body of the guitar, and so the actual guitar body becomes the becomes the resonance of the speaker, so you get the
which is just makes that little bit of a
it does, yes.
difference. That's amazing.
It adds a little bit of reverb, and it adds, well, I've got chorus on there, so there's reverb, chorus, there's a delay on there, plus a distortion, which I couldn't quite imagine why you'd want the distortion on an electric guitar, but yeah. on an acoustic guitar, but it just does for some reason. It's there.
Let's talk a little bit about songwriting. You've got all these songs that you've written since you were 14 years old. Do you actually sit and get lyrics first, or do you start playing the guitar and the words come? How does it work?
Well, it depends if I'm writing a song or a monologue. If I'm writing a poem or a monologue, it's always the words for some reason. Mm. Don't know why.
We haven't talked about the comedy section either yet, have we?
Not yet.
So do you get things, they come quite quickly to you?
It varies. Some things will come to me. This next particular song I'm going to play came to me in... I had a friend of mine... basically said, come on, sit down and write a song, because you can never sit down and write a song with somebody saying. But she said, well, just write about the first thing that comes into your head. And that happened to be a full-size cardboard cutout picture of the Queen. Don't ask me why, it just was. And I actually sat down and wrote this song within about half an hour. But there's other songs that I've had on the back burner for years and years, I've never finished. And some of them, you sort of half finish them and you're never really happy, and you sort of revisit them. There's a number of songs I've revisited and rewritten a few verses, or rewritten the chorus, or put extra bits in, or somebody comes along and says, what you really need there is such and such, and you go, oh, that's a good idea, and that takes you off again. It depends. Sometimes I'll get a nice little lick. In the stuff that I wrote in the late 70s, that was very much around guitar riffs. So there was little intros and things like that sort of inspired songs, inspired the backing. Most in those days, most of what I wrote was backing. I had a guy I used to write with at the time who did a lot of the lyrics, but I did some of the lyrics as well. It depends. Mm. Sometimes it's the guitar. Sometimes it's you'll hear somebody say some words, and you just get a lyric, and you end up with the chorus, but yeah. You can't think how to link it in. It varies. The one song I get asked to play more than anything else, a little bit of a Ralph McTell moment, I hate the song with a vengeance. A song called "The Microwave Song." It's basically about buying a microwave and using a microwave, and microwave being your one utensil in the kitchen. And it's got go listen to the song if you want to know about the last verse. But I actually had to put a health warning on the on my website. Do not try this at home. because I did get comments from the original idea for that last verse came from something that somebody actually did in America.
Yep.
But as only Americans can. And I won't spoil the song, go listen to the song, but it's the one song I get asked for more than any. Mm. But again, that's good. I do quite a few comedy songs.
Yeah.
The other comedy song that I get asked for quite a long is a song called Cleckheaton.
Michelle's laughing in the background there.
because I was with one of my very good friends, a guy called Harvey Andrews, who's very big on the folk circuit, retired, is the legendary Harvey Andrews, as he always says. He always said that America's a great place to write songs about because they've got such great sounding place names. Albuquerque, Memphis, Utah. They've got great names. You can write songs about them.
Mm-hmm.
Who in their right mind is ever going to write a song about Cleckheaton? So me and my very good friend Glenn Coggin, we sort of looked at each other and went, you know what, Harvey, we can. And Glenn came up with some fantastic lyrics.
Yeah.
And I helped him with the chorus and a couple of the verses. It's we've always penned it as being, it's mainly Glenn's song, but we penned it as being both of ours. But again, Cleckheaton is just one of those songs, isn't it?
So you've teased us with a couple of songs we're not going to hear today, but
yes.
The one we are going to hear is because you got inspired by a cardboard cutout of the Queen, which you obviously have at home somewhere.
Just the first thing that came into mind. It was just like, think of something. It was like full-size cardboard cutout of the Queen, which actually is only about 4'8", because she's only quite small.
Yeah.
Taller than you.
Thank you. I am sat down. So here we go. This is Clive Walker, and this song is...
It's called Picture of the Queen. There's a picture of the Queen on my billet door. I see it each time that I march off to war. It's there to remind me of what I fight for. There's a picture of the Queen on my billet door. There's a rifle beside me next to my bed, and a pistol I keep under my head. It's there for my safety, or so it is said. There's a rifle beside me next to my bed. I've got orders to make sure I uphold the peace, but no party wants all this terror to cease. For me it will end when I get my release. I've got orders to make sure I uphold the peace. Now I'm holding the ropes while I'm standing on state, ready to lay down on my colleague's crate. As they lower him down, this was never his fate. I'm holding a rose while I'm standing on stage.
left a wife and young baby behind. And I dread to think of what goes through her mind, to wake up one morning a letter to find, I've left a wife and young baby behind. There's a talk of a peace, and what's for the best, as I stand on guard in my bulletproof vest. The words that they speak, they seem only in jest. Talk of a peace, and what's for the best. There's a picture of the Queen on my billet door. I see it each time that I march off to war. It's there to remind me of what I fight for. There's a picture of the Queen on my billet door. There's a picture of the Queen. There's a picture of the Queen. There's a picture of the Queen on my billet door.
Brilliant. Round of applause. Amber said to me, delighted he's giving this one an airing.
Thank you, Amber.
He sounds like a stalking fan, doesn't he, actually,
Amber? He's
a bit of a worry. No, we don't mean it. Amber will be laughing about that. That is fabulous. It's great to have songs. It's storytelling, isn't it? So
yes,
you listen. You know, sometimes when you hear a song, you sometimes remember the tune, but you don't actually remember any of the lyrics. And that's what's lovely about folk music, is you can really get in, and the pictures. It's a bit like reading a book.
You actually can telling a story.
Yeah, you can see it in your mind.
And it's not just folk. I think any musical genre really should tell a story.
Yeah.
Even pop, you know, even Britpop, in a way tells a story. Now look at Blur or Oasis, and you look at the lyrics that they produced, and they still tell stories. And I think what makes a great song great is that it's got a good story behind it. Amber actually was the one that came up with with one of my strap lines that I use quite a lot. He always there's this particular song, and there's another song called Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which is about factions that face off against each other, whether it's internal to yourself, your good side and your bad side, or whether it's different points of view, football clubs, Arsenal, Tottenham, Everton, Liverpool,
West Ham.
I've got a story about West Ham, because I met the old manager of West Ham, one of the old players of West Ham the other day. He coined the phrase to me, the dichotomy of the man. And that is something that's always stuck in my mind. So hats off to Amber for that. Old mate, he's a good boy.
Your lyrics, I should have asked you this off air to prepare you, but I'm not going to, because I'm sure that you're going to be able to go, yes. What's the best lyric you've ever written where you went, my God, Clive Walker, you are a superstar?
Ooh. I'm leaving today. No, I'm talking with yourselves. My sweet little girlfriend. My sweet little girlfriend, she metamorphosized into the wife from hell. That's not my lyric. That's a lyric by a guy called Paul Tilly. I think that is the best line ever. The one that I wrote, so I had to say that because it's always the one line that I love. It's when I ever hear that, I play the song as well. But and he's a great lyricist. From my own lyrics, probably Cleck Eaton, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be a line in Cleck Eaton, which is, I've danced and I've eaten with girls in Cleck Eaton. Fine wines and doner kebabs.
Yeah.
And there's a line in there which is, her bodily sections move different directions, both at the very same time.
I like that, very good.
So, yes, but again, my comedy song lyrics tend to be the ones that amuse me more than anything.
What song, famous song, do you wish you'd have written? Is there one that sticks out in your mind you think, oh God, I wish I'd...
I knew you were going to ask me this one, actually.
Would it be a Beatles one, or...?
No, even though... That's obviously the popular thing at the moment. There's a lot of really great Beatles songs I love a lot. They're fantastic lyricists, Lennon, McCartney, musicians. I don't know, can I come back to you on that?
You can.
Because there are quite a few. As I've always been into recording, but having my own studio and recording myself has only really been the last 5-6 years, something like that. And I've converted, we've got a nice size outbuilding that I've converted into a studio.
Yeah.
A studio and place for plant pots. So again, it's similar size to this, really. And then a little annex, a recording annex on the side. And yeah, I've been doing that for a number of people. Latest one was a local band called Huckleberry Taylor. They've come and recorded their latest album, The Feeling, in there, which is I'm very, very proud of. I've had one or two people come in just wanting to do demos and or even just record their own material because they want to record it. They don't really want to put it out or do anything with it. They just want it recorded. Harvey Andrews as well. I used to do a mobile recording studios also. I go and record gigs or go to venues and record people. So Harvey Andrews, the folk guitarist and very, very fine lyricist. I recorded him for his latest album he's got. He used that as the demo for getting all of his stuff together for the new album. So yes, I've been doing.
Tell us why it's called Wobbly Chicken Productions.
Wobbly Chicken Productions. I've got to thank an old friend, an old work colleague of mine called Adrian Perry. If you're out there, Adrian, listening, hi mate. He was the single most funniest guy I have ever met. If you imagine meeting somebody, or if you worked in a shop and he came in and said, "Can I have a cup of coffee, please?" You would fall on your feet laughing because everything he did was just funny. He would just say something and it was funny. And we were in, it's a long convoluted story, but I'll cut it down. We were in a meeting discussing computer and IT standards, naming conventions.
Wish I was there, sounds interesting.
It was incredibly interesting. And it was an American company and there was a very auspicious American lady who was I think she was the head of HR in my mind, and we were talking about naming conventions for printers, and she was saying, "Well, now it's got to always end in dollar print." And Adrian turned around to her and said, in quite a straight face, "You can call it Wobbly Dollar Chicken for all I care; it doesn't make any difference." And everybody in the room just fell about laughing. So after the meeting we actually went back to our desks and we created a printer called Wobbly Dollar Chicken, and it's just stuck with me for ages. And I just thought it's a good the name's is unique. The name is funny, everybody asks about it. It's just me as well. It's just, even though it wasn't my invention, I've nicked it from somebody else, so the plagiarism from Adrian there is very true, but I never shy away from sort of thanking him for it. So Wobbly Chicken, Wobbly Chicken Productions.
Wobbly Chicken Productions. Now, gigging, you do gig a lot. You're out and about quite a bit.
I am, yes.
So where can people see you on a regular basis?
The regular gig I have is the Saracen's Head in Dunmo, which are the Sunday afternoon sessions. Although saying that, I've not got one there now until beginning of December, I think it is. Or the Cross Keys at White Notley. I'm there New Year's Eve this year. They've already booked me.
Yeah.
I play down there. I do an open mic down there on the third Monday of the month. So I'm generally out and about. If I'm gigging out, I very, very rarely do my own material. It's mainly covers I play. Because that's what people want a lot of the time. I tend to empty places when I play my own, because you've heard, you know, it's very depressing.
No, I think you do. Shut up. It is. It's one of those. It's as you said, sort of bread and butter money. That's what most musicians, when they do their own stuff, they have to. It's all like saying, I've got a friend actually. I never do a cover. She said, I only do my original material. Well, there you don't gig as much as you would if you did covers. It's just the way it is.
She never gets a gig that pays money either.
She won't be listening. I think she's in Dublin at the moment, but I think you know who I mean. So you can check out Clive, clivewalkermusic.com. You'll be able to find the music on there as well if you'd like to download anything. And the gigs are listed up on your website as well.
They are, yes.
Excellent. So what are you going to finish with today?
Shall we do the one we said about 3 or 4 weeks ago? When it was. Are you going to sing with me?
No.
I need to find the lyrics, so that's the only problem. Even though I do it in my live set, it's... yes.
Talk amongst yourselves. So tell us about this song, Clive.
This is... Well, you played it. You said you've not heard this song for absolutely years.
It's a beautiful song, yeah.
And you played it. And I think this is one of the first times when I actually pinged the show, wasn't it? Because I've been listening to it for a few weeks before then. Because with your Facebook stuff, I've seen it and sort of listened in.
Yeah.
And I think you played this, and I pinged you to say, oh, I love this song. It's, you know, I play it and whatever. And we started chatting from there. Yeah. I sort of said, well, I do it in my set. And you go, well, have you never heard of anybody actually doing it as part of a live set?
Mm.
I've played this a couple of times at open mics as well, various open mic nights. And the number of people who come to me afterwards and go, you know what, we've never even heard that song at an open mic night before.
Yeah.
So it's one of these songs that just you throw in for an open mic. So people who go to open mic nights, I'm a big supporter of open mics, and don't play the usual stuff. You know, Sweet Home Alabama has been done to death.
Yeah.
If anybody else asks me to play any of the standard blues... Then you know, there's a number of people who put on, there's a great one on Facebook this morning actually from I think it was Bob Connum, who said about he's standing there with his guitar and just like this, and he goes, "Nah, I've never even heard of Mustang Sally." So this is a song by the Alesi Brothers.
Yep.
1976 ish, somewhere around there, I think. And it's called Oh Laurie. I'd like to stay in love with you all summer, but after fall I'll keep you warm through the winter. Ooh, I'll tell you one thing, this ain't no summer fling. I'd like to ride my bicycle with you on the handlebar, laugh and run away, and I'll fade you through the meadow. Ooh, I'm loving you, it's all that I can do. Oh, Lori, you bring the spring, the summer, fall, ooh, and winter. Feel like I've been born again, born again. You dance with me in your bare feet that sunny afternoon when we made love to each other. Ooh, I'm loving you, it's all that I can do. Bring the spring, the summer, fall, ooh, and winter by the season. Oh, Lori, you make me feel like I've been born again, born again. Oh, Lori, you bring the spring, the summer, fall, ooh, and winter. Oh, Lori, you make me feel like I've been born again. I've been born again, yeah. I've been born again.